The Manitoba Association of Christian Homeschools would like to thank the Learning House for sponsoring this recording.
So thanks for welcoming me back. We're here to talk about curriculum. I have long been a book addict, a book hoarder in our house, but in recent years, 3.5 years ago, our family took over the Learning House, and so I took that book hoarding to a new level. And so I'll show you, if I can, a little bit of what our world looks like. We're going to be talking about choosing the best homeschool curriculum. And this is where I get to hang out these days. And so I don't know whether you can see, some of the TVs are on around you. You can see, take a peek at our store. We're just an hour north of Toronto in farm country. Our town is best known for growing carrots and for a great homeschool bookstore. So this is where we hang out and spend our days now. Having graduated 3 of our kids, my youngest is 14, and so she spends most of her time doing her schoolwork in the store. We made up a nice desk for her in a little corner, and then she gravitated towards the couch, of course, because she's a homeschooler. So we put a couch in our little office, and we work together there with her desk side by side and her mostly on the couch. Just to introduce you to my family, this is my fam jam. The picture on the right there is a picture here in Winnipeg of our daughter's wedding. They were married almost 4 years ago here in Winnipeg. And she married a Manitoba boy, and we really enjoy our visits. So today we're staying with his parents, which is really nice to be able to do. Picture on the bottom left is our expanded family. You'll see that we've added a granddaughter and another young man at the end there. We told him that he had to stand at the end in case we decided to crop him out, but then he proposed and we kept him. So they are getting married later this summer. And this lovely little lady is our sweet little Melody, playing the piano, and she's 8 months old, and she just makes everybody so happy. The next generation of homeschoolers starting to come along. So when we first started homeschooling, we've always had a humble little home and a lot of little girls, and I figured there was never too many good books in the house, but we kind of reached critical mass. And these are not pictures of my house, but they could be pictures of my house. I kind of felt like there was never too many books, but we came to the point where we realized that some books and resources were better than others, and that we had to start to be a little more discerning about what came into the house. And now I just have the privilege, being with the Learning House, to help you to decide which ones are the ones that should go into your home and which shouldn't. It's my privilege still to be able to try everything so that you don't have to buy everything. And so we get to try all kinds of things, but to weed out the things that aren't necessarily helpful for the Christian homeschooling family. So what might be worth putting on my shelves might not be worth putting on your shelves. We have to kind of think through what would be the most appropriate resources. And so let's talk about narrowing that down. I often get calls from people and they want to know, help me to find, whoops, it's not going to. Sorry to show it. Okay, we're going to just skip past that one. Help me to find the best homeschooling curriculum. And maybe you guys go on to social media. You see people put this on social media. I need the best science curriculum for grade 3. What does that mean? And then everybody gives their opinion, and we have some different suggestions. But I want to kind of knock down some of these misnomers. What is the best? And surprisingly, there isn't a best, or maybe not so surprisingly. We all want the best for our kids. Every mom and dad wants their kids to have a robust, competitive education. They want to prepare them for life, for the things that they're uniquely gifted for. But my best is not necessarily going to be your best. The best math for my kid might be one that has videos, or that might be a disaster for your family. For your child, it might be building a hobby farm, and that would drive me crazy. Or maybe you have the property or the space to raise chickens, and you're a proper homeschooler. We've never been able to be that proper homeschooler. But being able to respond to the ebbs and flows of your family's needs, of jobs. Many, many moms are working while homeschooling these days. Many dads are more involved in homeschooling these days. We often have responsibilities outside of our homeschool, like responsibilities to family, things that we're dealing with our children and extended family, with health. Maybe your children just really want to study a particular topic. So what is best is a very elusive thing. So what about finding homeschooling material for your family? And I want to first put in place where homeschooling fits in all of this. Homeschooling is a phenomenal opportunity. It's a phenomenal opportunity to build into our kids with time and with relationship. It's an opportunity to embrace values that might be different than those that are taught in public education, and responding one-on-one to our children's strengths and weaknesses, and tailoring the content to their style and their interests and their abilities. But we have to put homeschooling in its place. Homeschooling is not going to be the bulletproof formula. Finding the right homeschool curriculum isn't going to make your child the most spiritually or academically or emotionally or relationally astute. That is part of a broader investment that we make in our kids. So homeschooling is not going to be that magic bullet that makes everything work. So we need to remember not to make homeschooling an idol, that we need to be able to open up our eyes and open up our doors to what resources are around us. And it's not just going to be the right set of books that help to prepare our kids to be all God wants them to be. So there's more important things, though. I'm obviously sold out on homeschooling. We started to do this 1 year at a time, and here we are 21 years later. Okay. And let's talk about curriculum. There's some basics that every kid needs, and we're going to talk about these things. But there's also some things that are going to be tailored towards you. There's not going to be a perfect curriculum, and you're never going to see all of the curriculum. You shouldn't see. Let's try not to try to see all of the curriculums or find the perfect resource. I've had moms who call me up and say, my son really loves snakes and he needs to learn phonics. Do you have a phonics curriculum that's about snakes? And I have to say, no, we don't. There's just things that haven't been invented yet. So what you might want, you might have to tailor or work around. Or what's perfect today or for this kid might not be the best thing next year or for another child. So as soon as you think you've got it all put together, then we're going to have to keep thinking about different resources or new things that might work better for our kids. So talking about making a plan, what is curriculum? A curriculum is actually a course of study or a plan of studies. It doesn't necessarily mean a set of books. So I sell a lot of books. I love playing with books. I love ordering books. I love reviewing books. I love working with books with my kids. And I love reading. But a curriculum is something much more broad than that. From Latin, it actually means an action. A curriculum actually means the action of running or a course of action, a race. It even referred to a chariot. So your curriculum is that method of getting through to the end result. So we can talk about a math curriculum or a geography curriculum, but generally they're part of this bigger aggregate of courses given in a school. So like in Ontario, we would say the Ontario Elementary Curriculum. It kind of is a bigger course of action that's taking us towards an end. All of those refer to studies that have this end point or this finishing point, like a diploma or a degree. And so it's not just books. It's the plan for getting there. So what shall we do for this course of study? If it's a plan of study, then it can include things that are not just books and resources, but also novels. It can include teacher-student interactions, activities, adventures, projects. Relationships and mentoring are a key part of our curriculum. Skill development and experiential development are all part of the plan for your curriculum. So it's not about getting the best homeschooling curriculum. So we're going to focus on a course of study throughout this. Okay. So we're going to focus on getting, I can't read that part, the right course of study for our family. So just like in a race, we plot a course from beginning to end, and we need to start by asking, where are we going with this? And what do you want to, where is our end goal? What is the finish line? When a marathon runner starts running a marathon, they have a goal and they're going towards an end. And so while I will help you to choose the right trees in the forest, we can't get lost in the forest for all the trees. And that end result is, where do you want to be? What do you want to be able to say about these kids when they are fully grown? This question, what do you want to say about your kids when they are 30, is something that I read in a book by Larry Fowler, who is an administrative lead. I think he was the CEO with Awana Canada. And his question was, what do you want to say about these kids when they are 30? Because a lot of times we spend our time saying, I really need to find the right science curriculum and I need to find the right math curriculum. But in the end, the things that we're going to talk about our kids when they're 30 are not, they did really great on grade 3 math. Or they know all of the ins and outs of the chemistry and the physics that we had to do in high school, right? The things we want to talk about and share about our children are, they are, where are they rightly in relationship with God? How do they relate to God and to their family? How are they providing for their family? How are they interacting with society in a positive way? How are they pursuing their passions and their gifting? How are they doing the jobs that God has uniquely created them to do? So those are the kinds of things that are more important, and so it helps to dull the intensity of what we often get caught up in with, is this the better math curriculum than that? Okay, so keep that in mind, and it's a worthwhile exercise to just stop, take the time, think about it. Don't use my answer, use your answer. Write it down and know, what is it that you are working towards? What is the finish line here? What do you want to be able to say about these kids when they're 30? And it's more about that end goal than the steps along the way. So now, this might be a little bit overwhelming, and you might be saying, I just came in here to figure out what's the right kind of grammar. Show me the grammar. But I really think that this exercise is worth doing. And to be able to know your why, a second thing is that you want to write down, and we're going to get to the grammar, we're going to get to some of that stuff, but know your why. And mums and dads, if any of you have been at this for more than like 4 days of homeschooling, you know that you're going to come to a point where you're questioning all your life choices. Why did I do this? Why did I not let somebody else watch these children through the day, because they're driving me crazy this moment? And so you need to know why you came into this. And know, too, that loving people around you who care for you but aren't necessarily, that aren't homeschooling, might say, you know, maybe you could just put them in school. And you need to know why you are going to continue on this with this. When we got into homeschooling, we wanted to see our kids reach their potential, to see them thrive emotionally and mentally as well as academically. We wanted to have a closer family unit. And we as a family, one of our big impetuses was that we were doing foster care at the time. And we kind of felt like our days and our nights were mixed up. Like our neighbor kids would go to school and they'd learn about, you know, crazy family situations where mom and dad were fighting, and they'd learn their swear words, and they'd hear about bullies, and they'd have these extreme experiences. They could come home in the evening and know mom and dad are here and I'm safe and it's calm and we know what our family values are. We were often doing that like backwards. We would send our foster kids to school during the day and go, and then in the evening, we'd deal with some maybe erratic behavior from parents, or we would deal with erratic behavior from teenage girls or boys that were living in our home. And so like that kind of craziness happened in the evening. And that was a big part of just having that closer family unit and those core value times, so that our kids could say, this is our peaceful time. And that's what we wanted to do. And that was our why. So we've also seen our kids through health challenges, where I know that we wouldn't have been able to attend school regularly through health challenges, and maybe some of you are dealing with that too. So know your why, write down some of those things, and think about what is it that is bringing you to homeschooling? Why are you doing this? Write it down so that you have that in front of you on those crazy days. So now that we have a destination in mind and a reason for this, let's talk about the tools that we need to finish this course. Let's talk about getting equipped for the journey, what kind of a vehicle we're going to use. My husband firmly believes he runs this vehicle donation program, and he works with at-risk youth. He really firmly believes that all life lessons can be taught using a car analogy, so it kind of ekes into the things that I teach. So here we are, now we're driving on this race. And it reminds me that of this word picture that this story that happened once many years ago. My husband had come to visit somebody out on the West Coast and had left from Nanaimo in a car. It was an old car, and like he'd flown out and he was driving this car back. And he got into Saskatchewan somewhere, don't know where, and it started sputtering and having troubles. And he limped into a Canadian Tire and started looking for parts. So thankfully, he's pretty handy, he's mechanically inclined, and he could figure out what it needed, but he needed tools and he needed parts. And when he started pulling apart this car, he had some tools with him, and he ended up having to go inside to get other stuff. He ended up changing the alternator on this thing, and what he's found in all of his travels is that there's times when he can use a screwdriver and fix something, and you can use a screwdriver to fix many different things, or wrenches and so on. But then there's other times when you find yourself in the middle of Saskatchewan and you need an alternator puller from a 1988 K car. And so he had to go and find a specialized tool. There's times when you need a very specialized tool, and that'll take, you know, 3 hours off of the work time that you have, or you can keep on with the wrenches and the screwdrivers, and those will take you longer, but you can get the job done. So sometimes we need specialized tools. Sometimes what fits our kids will fit just about any kid. So what does your child need? What kind of tools do your child need? What makes your kid unique? These are some questions we ask while we think about homeschooling. I've talked to a few of you in the vendor hall, and you've come and said, I'm just so overwhelmed, I don't know what we need. These are the kinds of things that I want you to think about. Is your kid a hands-on learner? Do they like having activity-based learning? Or some of our kids, especially when they're really little, they're like, I really want a workbook. I want to have a workbook like older sibling, and I want to be a big kid and write in a book like mom. So some kids really love workbooks, and they'll buzz on through them. Others really want to get their hands on, and they're not going to sit still. Do they love to read or to listen to audiobooks? I had one that just could not stand audiobooks. It was there was too much sensory input for her, and she just could not stand audiobooks. And I thought, who can't love audiobooks? Every kid loves audiobooks. Not that one. Are they more of a visual or auditory learner? Do they love kinesthetic things? Do they have a passion for a particular subject? Do they struggle with or excel in one particular subject or another? So I'm just going to look briefly at some of these. Are they a visual learner? And I can't read you all these pieces, and I've kind of just summarized them, but a visual learner, do they learn by reading and writing? Do they learn by hearing? And that's, for me, I just thought, well, of course, everybody loves audiobooks. Everybody can enjoy audiobooks. Anytime you're out, you can be learning with audiobooks. But with this kid, she was like, no way, that's too much stimulation. She was very much the kinesthetic learner, and learned by getting her hands on and doing. So we had to learn to work together, because mom's like, if we just turn on an audio, everybody will know it at the end. And we had to learn how to work together on that. What about what you need? Mom, parent, whoever's doing the teaching. I had been homeschooling for quite a number of years before I spoke to a friend once who, she has 12 children, and she said, I'd been using the same language arts curriculum for all of my children year after year after year after year. And one day, somebody told me I didn't have to, and so I changed. And I thought, but what's best for my kids? And she realized that taking the time to switch and do a different curriculum because she was bored with the curriculum was a way to help her kids engage. So even if it was probably the best curriculum for her kids, because she was having a hard time with it, it was okay for her to switch. And so she switched curriculums, and that was something that was very refreshing for them. So mom, it's not just about whether your kid is a kinesthetic learner or an auditory learner, but are you prepared for the curriculum, the implications of the curriculum? So knowing things like how busy is your life? There's families that I talk to, they're like, we want all the hands-on stuff. And I remember a mom that has grown all her people, and they're all old and in university now. But when they were young and we would get together, they were always like building a topographical map out of 3 flavors of cake. And they were like mummifying a chicken in their Egypt unit. And they were building all kinds of different things. And I just thought, that just sounds like mess to me. It was just far too much for me. So if you are that mom who just loves always doing the activities, then do it. But also know that if you have a whole pack of little people and you're going to do a hands-on activity that's different with each child, that you have a limit to your time and you need to evaluate. Perhaps it's this subject or this child that gets those more hands-on things. So take time to evaluate your time, your energy, your attention, and things like other jobs and commitments that you have outside of homeschooling. Homeschooling doesn't have to take all of our day. I'm really a firm believer in that. But we also have to balance it out and make sure that we leave time for the things that we need. What's your teaching style? Maybe you really gravitate towards a Charlotte Mason style of learning. Maybe you gravitate towards something that's more curricular and something that is much more linear, and we can say, I opened these books and this is that subject. So be aware of what styles you gravitate to, and work within your budget. Knowing what your budget is, setting a budget can bring a lot of peace to your homeschooling days. There's tons of ways to be budget friendly. And while I buy a lot of books now and I sell books, there was days in our very early days of homeschooling when we did not have the money to buy books. We were always at the library. We were borrowing from family. We were getting something used or secondhand. And I can tell you, in the first few years that we did homeschooling, we set aside $200. And that covered our field trips, our books, our activities. We went on all the free things. We showed up at the library for anything that was available that was appropriate. We went on field trips to places like the grocery store and the post office, where they'd show you the back room and they'd give you a little tour. Like, those were the kinds of things that we could do on a budget in those very early days. And I want you to know and believe that you can have a very high quality education for your children without having to break your budget. Now, I had to invest more in time and energy, and I had the time and energy to do that then. But there was ways to make the homeschooling budget friendly. So use the library, invest in used books, old editions. I would say if you get used books, one thing that we often find at the store is moms and dads that have gone to a used bookstore, they find an older edition of a book, and sometimes that ends up costing them more than if they just got the new one, because you can't find the student book for this, or they don't have available a notebook anymore, or we're missing pieces and stuff like that. So keep that in mind as you look for used books, but used books are still some of my favorite ways to get some really unique things in our home. Trade, share with friends, look at copyrights on books. Some books can be reproduced, and so you can choose wisely for things that are non-consumable or that are reproducible for your family. Get a consultation, and this is something that we do at the store, at the Learning House, is we consult with people. So if you call us up, we have a team of experiential people, many moms who have homeschooled, some homeschool graduates, who can help to walk you through different curriculum choices. And my job and my goal and my passion is to help you to not buy junk and not buy stuff that you don't need. And I want you to not end up with anything on your shelf that is not usable. And so I really think that a consultation can help you to save some money. We don't charge for consultations. And so it's just a win-win to call up. We'll help you make a plan. Okay. Read reviews, talk to friends, make informed decisions, ask the right questions, not just what's the best curriculum, but what is a good hands-on curriculum about biology? Or what is a video-based math curriculum in the middle grades for a student that's struggling? Or like give it some definition as you look for those things and read the reviews and be flexible and work with what you have. Mold it to fit your needs. No curriculum should rule you. It should be your servant. So add different resources if you need. Take out questions if they're too much. Don't let the curriculum rule you. Okay. So let's talk about tools. Now we're going to talk about subject by subject, working our way through things. I'm not going to move from this spot. Just want to make sure that we're somewhat on time. So tools for the course. When we talk about building a curriculum, I usually talk in layers, and knowing what you need is the most important, what is most important, and here's the things that I would say that are the most important. First of all, your kids need to know that you love them, that we get along as a family, that we're in a safe place, that we'll get through this together even if we both hate math, that that mom and dad are the place that we can fall back on to overcome the troubles, whether it's math troubles or whether it's friend troubles or whether it's other things. That's more important than any curriculum. And they need to learn to read and do math. Those are the most important things. And If I had to just break down curriculum into the most basic parts, I heard Ruth Beechick taught this once in a book that I read by Ruth Beechick, and she said, really, when it comes down to it, you have two subjects, learning to read and reading. Because once our kids can read, they can conquer anything else. So learning to read is the most key part of our curriculum. And then numeracy skills, I believe, are just as important. Although they can be acquired once we can read. But the numeracy and literacy skills are the ones that help us to be able to acquire all of our other skills, like science and math and history, or underwater basket weaving, or whatever it is that your kids become passionate about. So those are the most core parts. So that's the first layer of what we would do. Now, the next layer would be to add to those general education. So we'll talk about general education. And the general education ones are the ones that you guys are needing to report on or that you're needing to put on your homeschool plan. These are the ones that are typical of a school program. So we also are going to add science, history, geography, and Bible. And I talk about Bible as a general ed course and not as that core course just because I'm just assuming that as a family, as a Christian family, that is a core part of our family time and who we are as a family. But in a curricular sense, like if we're going to choose whether we're going to study Old Testament or New Testament or study something topically or whatever, that's what comes into these general ed courses. So general education are the ones that round out what we would have to tell people about if we were saying, what do they learn at school? Electives are all the other fun things. So looking a little bit more at these general education courses, I often separate them into two parts. Math and language arts would be disciplinary subjects. The reason why we focus on them and that we make sure that we're always doing our math and language arts is partly because they are ones that we have to be doing incrementally, step upon step. So while we could say, hey, this year we did science, but it was a
tough year last year and we didn't do science at all, it's okay. We could come back to science this year and have missed it. It's not really like it's out of order. It's not like you have to study astronomy before you study botany, or that you have to study chemistry before you study physics. These things can be done out of order, or they can be done in increments as you're ready. We often don't study things like science, history, geography every day. They can be done once or twice a week, and you can develop a rhythm that works for your family. So some curriculums are very robust and you will study science every day, and other curriculums will say there's enough room for you to do this twice a week or two or three times a week. Okay. On the other hand, language arts, math, that's the kind of stuff that you can't really skip. You can't really say, hey, we put the whole team into grade 3 math this year, and next year we're all going to do grade 6 math, and then we'll go back and do grade 4. So we have to build skill upon skill. And just like doing something like becoming the greatest hockey player or becoming a pianist, you have to build skill upon skill by practice, as well as rhythmic, or as well as incremental adding of skills. So we have a disciplinary style of looking towards, so it's a discipline, it's a regular habit when we do our language arts and our math, whereas something like social studies, history, geography, science, and Bible, we can look at it very topically and move around. So if your family's like, we're all into like ancient Rome, then you can do that for a whole year. Well, all the other kids your age study Canadian geography, and it's fine. Oh, actually, I'm going to, before we go on to electives, just to stop and take a look at language arts in particular, because language arts is sort of like a nebulous topic. And then when you come talk to me, often you'll say, but what about grammar? Where does that fit? Or where does writing fit? And when does my kid need to start these different things? There are, like, as with math, there's various strands, like numeracy and geometry and spatial sense and so on. We tend to make a curriculum for math that interweaves all of those together, and you just get your math and you get the next level of math. Whereas with language arts, we will, you can do an all-in-one curriculum where they will vary the various strands by age and appropriateness. Or you can look at each different strand as needed. And it often helps to look at each different strand as needed, because sometimes our kids will really excel at reading but struggle with spelling. And so an all-in-one curriculum might not meet their needs for spelling, but it will for reading. Or an all-in-one curriculum might meet your needs for all of the parts, but let's also add a spelling because we're struggling with that. So language arts at different ages and stages looks like different things. So usually in about the kindergarten, pre-kindergarten, grade 1 age, language arts really should focus on phonics and handwriting. So we're going to focus on learning to read and learning to control our pencil, because when we can take in that information and we have control of our pencil, that's when we can start to communicate well and share outside to start to write ourselves. So after we have got a good running start with handwriting and phonics in about second grade, it really depends on your kid, might be earlier, might be sooner, we add spelling. Okay. Then once we have another start and that's part of your rhythm and we've got something working well in our routine and our disciplines, we will add writing and grammar. Your all-in-one curriculum might have your students writing and spelling very early on, but the focus is going to be on those phonics and handwriting, or should be on the focus and the phonics and handwriting skills, and then slowly changing that focus to, now I've got my, I know all those phonics rules, I can use them to spell and to write, and then to do grammar. And then as we get older, maybe around fourth grade, we're done phonics, we're going to transition to a reading type program. So we're not learning how to read, but we're learning about what we read by doing things like comprehension and vocabulary building. And again, you can do that as a separate curriculum. You can get vocabulary curriculums and you can get comprehension curriculums if you see that your kids are struggling with those pieces. Or you can get an all-in-one curriculum that's going to look at those pieces and then add in what you feel like needs to be done outside. So around fifth or sixth grade, we're probably still going to, with spelling, maybe handwriting. Usually around third grade, we might be doing cursive writing. And so we're still continuing on with our handwriting, whether that's a formal instruction or whether that's something that we practice while doing all of our other things. We're doing writing and grammar and reading. And by seventh or eighth grade, we might be done our spelling, but usually by at least the end of grade eight, we're done our spelling, and we transition into more vocabulary building. We definitely need lots of grammar and writing points. And in the high school years, language arts really focuses on I write well and I know good literature. So we do literature study and writing, and we will focus on formal writing skills. And we're working on perfecting skills with things like creative writing, research writing, persuasive writing, like writing persuasive essays, everyday writing skills like letters, memos, emails, and then when they're teenagers, you have to teach them about capitals and punctuation again. But that's sort of as we transition along. Our little people don't need to do research papers. Our big people shouldn't need to have handwriting lessons. But we meet them where they're at. So these all-in-one curriculums will transition through that in a sort of linear way. And your kids may not do that. Just like they outgrow their shoes, you know, you think, okay, you just outgrew three pairs of shoes in the last year. I'm going to jump up two sizes. And then they stay in that pair of shoes for 2.5 years. They just never grow the way that we expect them to. Likewise, with their language arts learning, they're going to grow in different ways, and you may need to make adjustments as you go along. Okay, so I just wanted to dwell on that because language arts takes a lot more thought, and it may be something that you piecewise, it may be something that you can do all together. And then electives. This is the riches. If you are familiar with the Charlotte Mason style of learning, that catchphrase talks about all of the other fun stuff. So while we can just start by making a plan for math and language arts, then it would be sad if you missed all of these other good things like art, music, physical education, cooperative learning, economics, psychology. What about philosophy, logic, French, like anything else, archaeology, whatever interests your kids. One of my kids wanted to study astronomy. Another one wanted to study archaeology. We found some books. We read them. They were fun because they get bogged down when it's just about math and language arts. But remember that when you start, it's just about math and language arts. And a full program can be, I do my math, my language arts, we read a lot, we play a lot. And build these things in as you are ready. So, whoops. There we are. Sorry, I'm having trouble controlling this. The big idea I want you to have going out of here is to blow the walls off of the schoolhouse. The core things we need, math and language arts, we can focus on those and do them. And if you're ready to build another, you know, build into something more formal in your programming, let's do that. But if you are not ready, then do a lot of play-based learning. Get out and do the activities. Go on the field trips, read the books, do the projects, do those kinds of things, and build in that formality as you need. And in the high school years, we, of course, are building more formality because we are preparing our students to be in, to be under next educators, whether that's in high school years or whether that's in college or university. But we want to not limit our kids, not limit ourselves, not limit our kids' learning to a time that is from 9 until 3, but that we need to recognize that they're learning in all kinds, in all the time, in all ways. Use books, but don't just use books. Use those field trips, those games, those crafts and activities and connections in the community and family. And find good resources with a place like the Learning House, with heritage resources, with the library, with used booksellers, and look into all kinds of different options that you have for making sure that those resources are available. But build that plan. The core is core family, math and language arts. Then we add in the other things like history, geography, science, and we can find all kinds of great resources for those. There's tons of good Canadian history and geography resources. And then make sure that you listen to your kids, listen to your family, and listen to your circumstances to find out what makes us unique. What are the things that help us to be uniquely us and that God has positioned us to do and be in this community and in our family so that we can learn in a unique way. So remember, it's not about finding the best homeschool curriculum. It's about plotting a course, being properly equipped, having the right tools, and making your way towards that end goal of having a student that is fully prepared for their next educational opportunity or their next work opportunity, and that they're graduating as someone who is fully living out God's unique plans for life. It's about it's about your why and your what that you want to focus on, and know that that is the core of building a curricular plan, is seeing where God wants to take these children. So we're looking for things that suit their lifestyle, their learning style, their passions, their natural abilities, that meet your needs and your budget, and that offer this varied subject material with strong math and language foundation. So keep your eye on the long game. Remember your why. Be flexible, but know what your boundaries are. And make sure that the curriculum is your servant, that it's not your master. We have time for some questions, and I encourage you to keep in touch with us. Our information is here. You should all have found in your goodie bag some contact information about the Learning House. We have a free ship coupon, because I'd rather that you took the time to think through, if you're not sure at, you know, at the end of an intense day like this, what your curricular plans are. You can go home, you can look through our website, and weigh things back and forth. On our website, we put as many samples and placement tests and scopes and sequences and all those kinds of things there, so that you can, in peaceful moments, sit down and weigh out some of the things that we can't do in a rushed and busy vendor hall. So give us a call at the store. We love to do consultations. I love to talk one-on-one with people, as does Louise House, who is the founder of the Learning House. She does all of our special needs consultations, as she has kids that have very unique learning challenges. And that was really her passion in her homeschool years, was finding resources for kids who learn differently. And so she's really passionate about helping families who have kids that learn differently. And so we would be happy to help you with those kinds of things. And we have some time for a few questions, I believe. So do you have any questions? Yeah. Okay. So the question is, how do you track progress when you're kind of a beat to your own drum kind of a family and you don't need all of the books in a very formal curricular pattern? So you've got your math and your language arts. We can, to a certain extent, you can beat to your own drum that way, but you can quantify what you've done with those core subjects. When reporting, and I have to say, like, I'm from Ontario, been homeschooling in Ontario for 21 years. We don't have to report things, so we're really spoiled in that sense. But I talk to a lot of people across the country who have a varying degree of reporting responsibilities. And what we do in that case is we write down, non-homeschooled educators, they look at learning outcomes in three basic ways. They want to know what time you spent. They want to know what content you covered, and they want to know marks. And so we can often quantify it by just saying, hey, we spent this amount of time. And oftentimes for me, what that meant was pulling out a, like, we would always have a day planner. I didn't have, I had different ways of recording our schooling at different ages and stages, but I always kept a planner, and I would often write retroactively, like rather than proactively, this is what we did this week. So we could just say, hey, we did this project, this thing, and I can quantify how much time we spent. Older students, we would encourage older students to make a time recording sheet. So your students may be grade 5 or 6, but probably more like 7, 8, and definitely in the high school years should start to record what kind of time they spent. How much time did I spend on math today? How much time did I spend on language arts? We just did at the Learning House a help for homeschooling high school course. And in that course, we had a template. You can make up this template really easily. We just put a lot of little boxes and they each had a little X in it. So each box is an hour. So each little quarter is 15 minutes. And your kids at the end of the day, they check off how much time they spent on each thing. And so they've recorded the time. In terms of recording content, if you have a curriculum, photocopy the or take a picture or scan of the contents page. But if you don't have a curriculum, just write down activities. And it can be like that, retroactive. At the end of the week, we did this field trip, we did this activity, we read this book, we did this project. That is your learning outcomes. And then in terms of marks, it can be anecdotal. As a Charlotte Mason family and ourselves, we didn't do a lot of testing with the kids in the younger years, some with math and sciences, but it wasn't until the older years that we would do tests. And so our marks could be anecdotal. We could say, she's learned very well about this, but could learn more about that. And so A, B, C, what was really telling was that in the upper high school years, the marks that I gave her, that I gave my children, which were rather anecdotal, did line up in terms of they got similar marks when they did formal courses with outside partners. And those were those outside courses that we submitted to universities for application. So when the university looks at that and says, well, that school says that she got an A and mom says she got an A, mom's probably got a good idea of what she learned. So that's recorded in terms of time spent, content, and marks. Does that help? Okay. I guess I should qualify that. So the question is, what if you skip science and social studies, and what if they come back and say that's insufficient? I would say, first of all, it's not that I would skip it, but that I would skip it formally. Like, it's okay to take those seasons when we say, I didn't sign up for, I didn't do a full year of Apologia astronomy, but this year we made a volcano that we blew up, and we made a cake that was a model of the Andes, and we did, like, you know, those kinds of things. We read these books, we spent this time, we went on this field trip. So quantifying what we did. So just doing math and language arts, I am assuming that you are playing a lot and reading a lot to fill in those gaps as well. So yes, thank you for clarifying that. That was, I should have said that more clearly. So if that is insufficient, I would say, what is it that you're looking for? I've had times when speaking to an ex educator, when they did that, when I brought them like the science curriculum, I said, here's the science curriculum we did. They said, that's insufficient. And I said, why? And they said, well, she didn't do astronomy. And I said, oh, okay. Well, we actually also read this book about astronomy. So sometimes it's about communication. And I know that, like, how much do you have to follow provincial learning outcomes here? I don't know. Do you have to study astronomy in a particular year here? Or do you just have to study science? That's the question. I don't know, because I'm not in Manitoba all the time, but I have talked to parents across the province who say it's different from board to board. So it might be something that is a particular, something that's particular to your board or your facilitator. Okay, so the feedback is... Mm-hmm. Okay. So just to reiterate that so other people can hear, I think that what you're saying is that it helps to be less specific. My child is learning about this and this, and usually that's enough. But that's sort of where I would lean, but I'm not, I can't be legal counsel. I don't know, like HSLDA can help you to word that a little bit better, but I think that being more open-ended in our descriptions can be a little bit helpful too. We are learning about this and this. Is that a good summary? Okay. Okay. Shout it loud. If you can shout loud, just because there's a lot of kitchen noises behind me. Okay, that's a really good point. The point is that Manitoba curriculum is publicly available online and that you can read through that and use the language that they use in writing your reports. So saying something like they're doing equivalent to. Okay. Any other questions? You've been a quiet bunch. I have a question for you, and that is, my big question is, what do you want to say about these kids when they're 30? What is it? What is your why? Use this as your basis, but I'd love to hear what some of your whys are, and what do you want to say about these kids when they're 30? Independent, discerning, yep. Yes, to be able to do life well and to love God. I love that. That's great. Yeah, and to be socially engaged with a wide variety of people groups to show that they love and engage with people across all kinds of different social boundaries. That's neat. Yes, to say that life was an adventure. Neat, neat. Yes. We want our kids to have strong character and to be able to deal with real life. Yes. Yes. To be secure in their faith and who they are. Yep. 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 So we teach them science and we teach them history and we teach them geography so that they can be culturally relevant and take these values and these important things into the world and... they're just tools, though. They're not the end. So keep it in perspective. Come visit us if you want the nitty-gritty on what's the best grammar. We can chat through them. But there isn't a best grammar. There's one that might fit your family a little better than another. So thanks for spending the time. I welcome you to come and visit us in the vendor hall. And thank you guys for being so welcoming and coming to visit us when we've come so far. We appreciate you and hope to help you out.